Hi, I'm Andrew Rich, and if you're like me, you look at the state of modern wrestling discourse and think, wow, what a cesspool. That's why I'm here to tell you about Music of the Mat Remix. That's right, your favorite wrestling music podcast is back with a new format, where I bring on a guest and we play songs related to wrestling-themed topics. It could be a wrestling reference, a wrestling concept, a wrestling pun, things of that nature. Now you might be saying, Andrew, that is a very, very tenuous connection to pro wrestling on a wrestling podcast network. Is this just an excuse to hang out with your friends and talk about music and ignore the rest of the wrestling landscape? Yes. Yes, it is. So listen to Music of the Mat Remix on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on Apple, Spotify, or your podcast player of choice.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Like professional wrestling, well, we like professional wrestling too. This week in the news, a epitaph for Steve Mongo McMichael and everything that happened during WrestleMania weekend in the Lazy River. I think Chris is going to talk a lot about WrestleMania weekend. I have talked a lot about it already, but I will try and put in my two cents as well. An Invader Club, Chris has selected Kenta Kobashi versus Steve Dr. Death Williams from 1994. I am Jeff Hawkins. He is Chris Novembrino. And as I just said, yes. If you want to hear me do lots and lots of audio, I did 2 hours after each night's WrestleMania with Sean Ross Sapp over at Fightful. Thorough deconstructions of WrestleMania and all that. But yes, the as we like to say, peak season is finally over, with the possible exception of tonight's SmackDown. I'm keeping an eye on that. I expect Malakai Black to return on this show and possibly a call-up or two, maybe Tony D'Angelo up there. If I get notes, I'll put them on the air. But Chris, have you survived this weekend?
I did survive this weekend. I actually managed to watch most of Mania because I was working on music, so I just kind of had it on my TV in the background and let it wash over me, which I think... Frankly, being semi-disengaged from this show, I think, was the right way to approach this show. It was not a lock-in, focus super hard on every moment of the weekend sort of thing. I think you'd be pretty burned out. And so for me, kind of coming in and out, watching some stuff half-assedly or like barely watching other things, that worked pretty good for me.
We're going to talk some narratives during the Lazy River, because there's a lot of people go, wow, are you guys worried?
No.
Hey, WWE had a bad weekend. No, they did not. Stop it. They had some miscues in the media, but nothing bad about the weekend in terms of business. Let's put it that way.
Just to sort of answer this question up front before we probe on it deeper, right? So you and I, Jeff, have been doing a podcast that has been focused on WWE long enough that you could even call it a WWE history podcast. In a way, like we've been doing it almost 10 years, like maybe longer. I don't know.
Longer than 10 years, but you and I have been on, I think, eight.
Eight, yeah, right, yeah, like that's a long ass time, and like I used to close caption shows, used to close caption wrestling during that, like as a student of WWE's history, going all the way back to like the WrestleMania era to now, I've seen some garbage ass WrestleManias in my day, and this company's stock price, its television market share, everything is still standing. If anything, it's stronger than ever. So whatever issues this show had, when I look at it and extend it back into the history of the last 10 years, dude, this doesn't mean shit. Yeah. Sorry, nerd.
Well, let's start with the sad news. Rest in peace, Steve Mongo McMichael. We just talked about him in Vader Club a couple weeks ago. Earlier in the morning on, I believe, yesterday or Wednesday, the day, whenever he passed, he was going into hospice care, and then later that afternoon, he passed. So, I mean, he had been fighting ALS for 5 years. He was a shadow of his former self. He did get to live his dream and see himself inducted in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Good on him. There's not a lot more to say that we didn't say a few weeks ago when we had him and Benoit versus the Faces of Fear. But
look, he's a big lumbering guy, you know, a bit of a brute in the ring. Clearly had a lot of personality.
Yes.
I think that if they had figured out a better way to utilize him for what his strengths were and minimize his weaknesses better, you could have gotten a lot out of Mongo in the middle of the card. As just kind of a guy who's always an attraction guy. He could have been a Hacksaw Jim Duggan for that company.
Well, you mean in the WWF sense of a Hacksaw Jim Duggan?
Yes, come out, ho, 2x4, some tackles, everyone likes him. You know what I mean? Mongo gets the crowd pumped, and his matches are 4.5 minutes.
Yeah, and what he came in at a time where ECW was the hot product and all the work rate guys were starting to get picked up by WCW, you know, your Jerichos, your Malenkos.
They always made him try to do too much, right? Like, yes. So the reason we have so many goof reels of Mongo is by virtue of the fact that WCW was overexposing him badly on a regular basis. So like you end up getting all these goof reels.
You know who you don't put them in with? You don't put them in with small you don't put them in with guys like Eddie Guerrero. You put them in there with guys like Scott Flash Norton and the Barbarian and
Ice Train.
Yes.
Hugh Morris. Guys with large centers of mass so that they're easy to hit.
Yes, you're doing power versus power matches versus grace and technical wrestling. It's not what you get out of him. But, rest in peace, Mongo. I loved him as a football player, too. Those 85 Bears.
I have
Bears,
a soft spot for him, for sure.
Those 85 Bears, I mean, if you were a kid playing peewee ball, that's the defense you wanted to be. Everybody wanted to be Singletary and Richard Dent and Fridge and Mongo and... That defense was insane too. Big news, I would guess, coming out of, or at least surprising news coming out of the weekend, WWE bought AAA. Announced it on Saturday, right before WrestleMania. WWE announced the purchase of AAA on the first day of WrestleMania, along with announcing a joint AAA and NXT show on June 7th at the Kia Forum here in Inglewood, California, 3 p.m. Eastern Time. That would air before Money in the Bank at the Intuit Dome in Inglewood, right down the street, if you want to go to Inglewood, at 7 p.m. Eastern. Later, when the press release came out, they called it that WWE and Philippe, I believe is how you say it, a Mexican-based sports entertainment holding company, had purchased AAA from the Roldan family. WWE and AAA had talks on and on since Peña, the founder's death, regarding ownership, with the earliest reports of negotiations dating back to around 2007. The early days of the talk, it always came down to the idea of working together with WWE putting in money and getting ownership, which would allow the company to expand in the U.S. Looks like that's not happening. It looks like they may get some cash, but Triple H seems to be indicating that with, you know, some, as we like to put it, consulting from WWE, that they will remain a lucha company in Mexico. Now, there's a few issues here. They don't have the deepest roster in the world. They do have Vikingo. I believe their champion right now is one Alberto Del Patron. Which
I have ideas. We can fix that.
We can fix that. Oh, okay. I'm interested in this When Worlds Collide show with NXT. WWE is kind of shifting to a ownership stake, but letting people run it as they were. But they are not the stronger of the two lucha companies in Mexico versus CMLL. If you've watched Triple Mania the past few years, it tends to have possibly the worst match of the year on the card every year. Although there might be a contender from WrestleMania weekend this week, not on one of the indie shows this year.
I forgot that they now have Psycho Clown. They have access to Psycho Clown 1 and 2. That this is exciting for this company.
Look, I want the LA Park in.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
You know, that excites me. I wouldn't mind Masquerita Sagrada making a comeback in the WWE of some sort. But, I mean, the only thing I have guaranteed is that if the first year of this relationship goes well, Conan's going into that Hall of Fame. Yeah, we're getting the return of Conan. Look, the cynicism of how they announced this was something on the pre-show. It was all the Hispanic wrestlers come together. So we had Rey, Phoenix, Penta, Stephanie Vaquer, Vikingo, who they kind of gave some shine to on that first night of WrestleMania. You know, I mean, or was it first night or second night? I can't remember.
It was night one.
Night one? Oh, yeah, that, with the Rey Phoenix thing. I don't know. I mean, it's an interesting thing. People are, this is the death of AAA, just like everything else that WWE goes into business with. I don't know. AAA wasn't exactly knocking them dead in Mexico. They had good houses, but not great houses. Good cards, but not great cards. You have any thoughts on this that are deep in any way?
Yeah. Okay. So look, AAA has been a middling company in Mexico, the territory they primarily work, for a while. They've been competing against CMLL. They're the number two company, but they're not that far behind. I think that WWE getting AAA gives them an already established brand and title lineage that the market is familiar with. And gives them the ability to bring in WWE talent to have higher profile matches and higher quality cards. I think it is entirely possible to pop a nice house off of two or three big name talents and then, you know, a couple of guys that you send down there and really start building up with the crowd. I'm not even joking when I say I would consider sending Chad Gable down there with this El Grande Americano gimmick. Because the work's there, dude. That moonsault senton was badass.
Yes.
Now, this guy will get over on the work and on the merits. It's not just merely a cutesy-wootsy gimmick, but I think it will get heat. But sending him down there, maybe having him have a feud with some of the AAA loyals and kind of doing like a New World Order invasion-style angle or something like that is a good way to draw some fairly major houses. They're doing.
Yeah, and you have a roster of guys. I mean, you have Andrade, Rey, Phoenix, Penta, the Garzas, Dragon Lee.
You telling me that Rey Mysterio wouldn't pop a house in Mexico?
Rey Mysterio is going to sell out a joint in 10 minutes, especially if you put him up against Masquerita Sagrada.
Right? So there's a lot of ways where I think this could be...
Yeah.
Where this can be very generative for both the Mexican side and also the American international side, like the more global side here. I think there's a lot of opportunity for WWE merged with AAA to do business that neither WWE nor AAA could do. And I think, you know, it allows them to potentially go into Mexico here and within 5 to 10 years be the dominant player in the Mexican market with CMLL chasing them.
Yeah. Like everything, it's just depends on how heavy handed they're going to be with the business, how much they want to kind of streamline a process of getting things from AAA to possibly NXT / the main roster. Do the guys who were down in Mexico want to go back to Mexico? That's a big thing too. You never know. I mean, one of the reasons why you come to WWE is that, you know, you have a bigger stage. And then if they just say, hey, we're taking all these guys that are in mid-card LWO feuds and just shipping them off to our foreign territory and stuff like that. But, I mean, you know, it's part of world domination, and they're seeking it. So, I mean,
yeah,
it's not a surprise.
I think, honestly, it's been exciting in the post-McMahon era to see this company actually have a much more sound plan for international expansion than McMahon's half-assed approach to Japan and half-assed approach to India that we saw.
God, that and in Japan they've teamed with Muta and Noah. So
right.
the problem is that, like, they brought Omos back to do nothing, and he was actually getting over in Noah from what people were telling me as part of their tag champs. And it's just like,
And the guy Inamura that they brought over, I think, is great. That guy's got personality. I think he's got a different look. Like, I like the extra size on the man. I think it's a good, you know, it's fun. I want to see more of him.
I'll do it for news for right now. Now let's get into the big ass lazy river of wrestling criticism, because there's a lot to talk about. We'll do WrestleMania weekend, but I gave short shrift because we recorded this last Wednesday afternoon before Dynamite. That Dynamite that surpassed Nitro in terms of weekly shows on Turner was fantastic in terms of wrestling. I loved the Mercedes versus Athena match. I loved, I believe it was a Fletcher match. There are a few matches on there. I just don't have them written down right now because I have the other Dynamite written down in front of me. But no, I didn't want to give it short shrift. It was a great show. People say it's funny, Chris, because people say, oh, you're so anti-AEW. It's like, dude, I went back and listened to a show in 2021 or 2019? I can't remember which.
You're gonna quote chapter and verse. That's not normally what our critics like to do.
No, I know that, but it's like Chris was like saying, I hope AEW beats WWE, and I said I hope they punch him in the mouth. So I think we call balls and strikes here as the wind blows. I'm good with that. But yeah, WrestleMania weekend happened. So let's start with that. It's the elephant in the room. Started with media junkets of all kinds, with Roman Reigns talking to Vanity Fair and saying he was a Democrat who voted for Trump. Didn't go over well with a lot of people. Triple H also kind of being a little Trump-friendly in an interview. John Cena and Triple H both at one time or another saying that they loved Vince McMahon. Triple H in his 1 hour, but don't pay attention to me, Hall of Fame speech. Cena in another one. Paulie, and it ended with people on the McAfee show saying stuff too. Paulie just getting in trouble left and right with him playing heel shtick after Saturday. Rock talking about the creative that, not my problem, not my circus, not my monkeys. That's maybe an important one. Bailey on Chris Van Vliet kind of right before they did the angle on SmackDown about her getting written out of WrestleMania, seeming to be unhappy. Where to begin here, Chris? Where would you like to be on the lazy river of WrestleMania weekend?
On the just the open comments here, the Roman Reigns one, it hurts my brain because it reeks of like way too calculated and formulated and like focus marketed to be quote unquote inoffensive, but it's actually like offensive to kind of everybody.
It's very Dwayne.
It's very Dwayne, right? It's the same team that would do that, but it's one of those comments that's supposed to come off as exceedingly neutral, but has a way of grating on everyone's nerves. I guess it's equal opportunity offense, but that's not noble. And not a laudable thing. That's just like kind of a phrase that people used to say back in the day. It's tedious. It's uniquely tedious. In a way, I sort of find, you know, Triple H saying what he said to be more authentic.
I don't know how much to read into the Rock stuff on creative. Because he's both being honest and dishonest at the same time. Because, I told them I wasn't going to be at WrestleMania. That's true. That had been reported for weeks by both Dave and Sean Ross Sapp. I get that. But at the same time,
This whole angle runs through you.
It runs through him. There's also that air of, but don't close the door. I may want to do something. Much like he did at Elimination Chamber and at that Raw and then at that NXT. You know, when Rock wants to be on TV, he'll be on TV.
This heel
and you have
run
to change
of
the
his,
plans.
This heel run of his started off gangbusters.
Yes.
And now, as we've gone into year two, I'll do shit when I want to do stuff sort of thing. It doesn't work. Like, when you're looking at this John Cena angle, which has floundered, him as a heel has definitively floundered. It's felt half-baked, half-formulated. His promos have felt flat to my estimations. This whole I'm gonna, you know, be the Grinch is boring, and he settled into this Grinch crap because Dwayne absented himself from a storyline that he started. This began with Dwayne coming out to Cody and saying, be my champion. And then Cody wouldn't be his champion, so he made John Cena his champion.
His champion.
And so everything that's motivating Cena right now has to include, especially this reformulation of his personality and a fundamental disobedience from everything he's ever been, has to be driven from this Rock character and this deal with the devil. So I have a real problem with the idea that, quote unquote, his work was done here. Not going to need me at Mania. Not going to need me at Mania. Yeah, like...
Leonard Nimoy and the monorail. My work career is done, but you didn't do anything, didn't
yes.
I? And then he disappears. Didn't. Yeah,
yeah. I'm like channeling like that, and then also like this this clip from like the 2008 campaign where like Bush and McCain were next to each other. McCain was like, "Well, maybe George Bush could help me run," and Bush is like, "Ah, you're not gonna need me." Like right on camera to McCain. Same idea here.
It also feels like, all right, John, we're going to make you a heel. Here's our idea. I don't like that. Here's what I'm thinking. Okay, let's go with that. That's what it feels like. It feels like they pitched him an idea and he didn't want to go with it because it either went too hard heel into his image or there was just stuff he didn't want to say. So he decided he was going to do it this way and blame the fans when the fans had nothing to do with it. It was all Rock. Again, it worked all through Rock. Now,
I mean, that's part of the reason this angle was bombing a bit.
Yes. Now, going to the angle itself, I mean, not the angle, but the match, this feels like a pitch that Cody might have made in AEW, to be honest with you. It felt like it was straight out of 1986. Set up for In an interview with Cody, where Cody says, I still love John Cena. He gets the belt. He has a chance to hit John Cena, and he hesitates like a dumb baby face. He doesn't have anybody out there after years of fighting the bloodline. You know, in case somebody came in there to you know, there's nobody there telling him, stop being a moron.
Which is even worse when you see Orton the next night.
Yes. And then... And he gets kicked in the ding-dong and pinned for three. It's like, that is straight out of 1985, 86, and I get it, but I also don't get it, because that's not the Cody character. The Cody character is that he is a smart babyface. He is a calculating babyface. He is not his old man. He is more Ric Flair than he is Dusty Rhodes. He wears the suit. He knows the importance of being a champion. He has a little of that dog in him when it comes to cheating. He's fought guys like Roman Reigns who will cheat. So he had plans for that, for when they would cheat in last year's WrestleMania where he finished his story. He was smart. Now all of a sudden he has to fight John Cena and becomes an idiot? No, that's why it died.
I mean, but, you know, again, it's like Cody not having the Rock motivationally to play off of here.
Hurts.
Again, it hurts. It just hurts, you know? So, like, I go back to that Dwayne comment, and I'm like, dude, you just couldn't be more wrong. Like, this angle needed your presence. Honestly, like, I think it would have been great for Cena to have a Dark Night of the Soul.
Yes.
And Rock yells at Cena and basically breaks him. Like, we actually have, like, a Rock spiritually breaking John Cena moment.
Yeah, I mean, like Cena could have been, you know, taken over by the thought of breaking Flair's record or whatever. And it just, it's...
But then he has second guesses on it. And that's when Rock comes in and is like, you are doing this. This is not
an option. You made this deal. It is too late to turn back.
It is too late. Yep. Yep. And John, you need to understand the consequences if you turn back. And like, you could even never actually articulate them. Just have Rock pull Cena close and whisper them into his ear that there's no turning back on this thing. You could keep that a MacGuffin. Like, but there's just him not being in the story, in my opinion, is kind of it's the original sin of what's been going on here.
Okay, the view from 30,000 feet for the two Mania nights. Night one, you had the lowest of bars you had to get through. You only had to get to Yeet in the opener. You just had to have Jey Uso win that one. And then you had to have a compelling main event that told an interesting story. I thought it hit it. Everything in between was kind of mid to good. But you had a low bar to clear on night one, and I think they did it. I mean, there are people who complain that Gunther tapped out way too quick to the choke. I thought it did its job in that. You know, maybe Gunther wasn't used. Maybe they should put over on commentary he wasn't used to getting choked out. But that's how he choked out Jimmy. I mean, it was fitting. And then, of course, that main event. I enjoyed every moment of that. I did. The three-way was good. As soon as Heyman gets in the ring, you know he's turning on both of them. We had that in our prediction show that he was going home with Seth
Surprisingly
Rollins.
Fewer people did than I thought. I was like listening to like Cornette the other day. He's like, I didn't think that was going to happen. I was like, really? That's totally where I thought that was going.
Yeah. And Heyman was just, chewing scenery the entire night. It was fantastic. Let me get the card up. Anything on night one you want to go into?
So going to Uso and Gunther. I thought Jay, a lot of times his matches are a little too gimmicky. I thought this match was really good. Gunther always gets the best out of the people he works with, it seems like, on such a reliable basis. And I didn't, going to the finish, Gunther's tap out, I would have had a pass out rather than tap out. Or if you're going to have him tap out, I would have had him show fear. Like it was a panic move that Jey Uso actually, like, the reason Gunther tapped out so quickly is because he was panicking that Uso broke him. I think that would have been a better little tweak to it. But, commentary also could have said something like, Jey Uso just hit him with multiple splashes, knocking all of the air out of Gunther's lungs, so there's just nothing in his lungs to draw off of once the choke gets slapped on. He's already gasping for air, and here comes the choke.
Or Gunther's not used to being choked himself, and he panicked. I mean, either
right,
one of those.
Right, that's what I was saying. The panic is a good story, too. But either one, Like having the choke be both literal and metaphorical, I think, is actually probably the stronger of the two options.
New Day War Raiders was solid.
Yeah,
I think they should have concentrated a bit more on the next story for the New Day. I howled at the level of heeldom of the New Day's attire. When you're doing an homage to Giant Gonzalez, who famously had one of the worst matches in WrestleMania history at WrestleMania 9 in Las Vegas, that is a deep cut. I did enjoy that, but it was fun from them. I really liked it. Jade Cargill and Naomi, I thought, over-delivered in some ways. Look, Jade had to sell, and that was always her knock in AEW, is that she couldn't sell. Thought she did fine in this one. Naomi helped carry her to a good match. Any thoughts?
Yeah, if anything, My estimations of Naomi went up because this has been a good example of her having to be the better person in the match and be kind of responsible for getting the most out of the match. And I thought she did a good job and she didn't have the best partner to work with. Like, look, if Naomi got lost, Jade's not going to save her.
Jacob Fatu and LA Knight was what it was supposed to be. LA Knight got some shine, but Jacob Fatu then killed him. Built a new star. I liked this.
Yeah, I liked it too. LA Knight, it just seems like the magic is over. They killed him when they put out the t-shirt, or like a week before they put out that t-shirt, and he's never recovered.
True. El Grande Americano, who has Stars and Stripes Forever played by a mariachi band as his theme music. That's the best.
It's such a good gimmick. The haters need to go jump in the Gulf of America.
I love that the medal keeps getting bigger every time he uses it to a ridiculous point. But he defeated Rey Fénix here, replacing an injured Rey Mysterio, who had a groin injury going into Mania. I might have called an audible here and made it a little bit more wonky in terms of how the finish was. Because, yes, they played up that Rey Fénix tried to kick him in the head and kicked the metal and hurt his thing. Yeah, he did get the rub kind of from Vikingo later in the match. But I think there should have been possibly a little bit more chicanery here, and that Rey Fénix should not have taken as clean a pinfall as he did, even though it wasn't quote-unquote clean. I think it was still a little bit too clean.
I would have had El Grande Americano get disqualified. I mean, like, I don't think you actually needed to have this go to a finish. I think these guys are so good. Chad Gable, he's such a great wrestler. He is so talented. There's so many great spots from, like, the American Alpha and FTR matches back in the day to, like, just – that moonsault senton was exceptional. I think, yeah, he should have been. Chad Gable should have got, like, the plate should have gotten caught, right? Like, it would have been perfectly fine for Gable to get disqualified here because they catch the plate. And then, like, now we get to the next wrinkle of this, which is Gable comes out. Initially, there's no plate, and then he works the plate in at some time during the match or something like that. You just the next wrinkle onto the plate in the forehead gimmick.
Tiffany Stratton and Charlotte beat Charlotte Flair. That shocked me a bit. This was the low point for me of night one. I thought Charlotte was off her game. I thought she was dead weighting a little bit on some of these slams and stuff from Tiffany. I can't prove that. It wasn't a bad match, but it wasn't a good match. And it was a fight for a while there.
It did not feel like Charlotte was out there to have a good match.
No.
And she accomplished her goal.
Yeah. And then the three-way, any other thoughts on that?
Look, I thought the three-way delivered on the drama. I think that the Seth Rollins, Paul Heyman, Braun Breaker, Penguin, Joker, and Bane faction is going to be a lot of fun.
That's perfect. Oh, I have a note on that match. It has nothing to do with the match. Living Color is still friggin' awesome.
Oh my God. Vernon Reed, 66, just dropping volcanic fire in that intro. I mean, I have seen a lot of live music at WWE and in New Japan World shows. And the only thing that's, like, kind of even close to that was Marty Friedman at Wrestle Kingdom about 10 years ago, where Friedman came out and he was just absolutely and, like, playing at such a high level. Vernon Reed, that man can just massacre a guitar. And to be able to do that live on demand, like in that moment in front of that many people, that is a rare, rare, rare talent.
And Corey Glover still has the pipes too. I mean,
I know, and Vernon Reed's 66, and Corey Glover's probably, you know, going to be around 60.
I think it's a little, I think it's like 62, 63.
Yeah, right. Yeah, no,
one,
I know.
One of my favorite concerts ever was Living Color and a Fishbone, the Boathouse in Norfolk. I still think about that concert from now and then and hear what they are 35 years later. And they're doing this. I mean, that was, and it was good of them because they were going to do the free, they did the free show on Fremont, I think Friday night. And I don't know if they had planned to use them, but they brought them in anyways. I don't know that for a fact, but
I mean, man. Credit to Phil Brooks for time and again, making sure to get Cult of Personality, yes, like in Living Color, like themselves on a stage getting paid. Like, I mean, Phil Brooks has gone out of his way, it seems, on a number of occasions to make sure these guys get paid, which, as a musician living in an era where more and more people and businessmen are going out of their way to make sure musicians don't get paid because, you know, we just have too much money, I think it's great that Phil Brooks is trying to push it a little bit in the other direction.
And then we got to night two. And it started with, and I'm going to say this, Chris, this might be my favorite WrestleMania match ever. I adored this three-way between Io Sky, Bianca Belair, and Rhea Ripley. I know I've watched other matches, and yeah, I would also include He Who Shall Not Be Named winning the world title on a WrestleMania. But this is one I'm probably going to go back and rewatch at some point in my life and just have the same feelings about it. And it was surprising to me, because this is one of those ones where the commentariat, ourselves included, overthink this way too much in terms of, oh, The Office really likes Bianca. The Office really likes Rhea. They're both big stars.
Neither of them actually needed the belt to keep the story going.
They were telling the story that they were telling us on TV. Io Sky is being overlooked by everybody in the women's division, especially the top talent in the women's division. How do we solve that? We have her win because she was being overlooked by both of the big dogs in the women's division. This match was absolutely sublime. And Io, look, we've known Io has been one of the greats for a long, long time, but she's never gotten that moment. It's the first victory for a Japanese wrestler at WrestleMania ever, I think.
Wow.
Yeah, I adored this match. I can't give it justice with platitudes, but everything was smooth. Everybody was in the right place at the right time. It didn't look like it. I mean, all the double teams were good. I love this, Chris. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that this is for me the most complete story, and obviously match of WrestleMania weekend. I think that they did such a good job making the champion seem like an underdog and making the challengers seem like overdogs,
yes,
coming in. And there's a lot of nuance to the storytelling, right? No one was overtly a heel going into the match. Like slight heelish tendencies from Bianca, but like,
it got into the being, everybody was kind of being a jerk to one another, except
right,
Io.
Right. They didn't quite, you know, no one had to go heel to get the heat on this story, because what you're doing is developing this tension between Bianca and Rhea and sort of telling multiple stories concurrently. I really liked the way this one came out. I think, you know, the one downside, these scripted English promos for EO, at minimum, we have to stop using bad English idiomatic phrases that don't even really translate. Like, she said she was over the moon this,
yeah,
week. That is not actually, well, something that she would say.
But it ties into her moveset, because the name of her is the Over the Moon Salt.
Okay.
See, it's all branding. It's not. I agree with you. I mean, there are parts where she's speaking from the heart and you can tell, and it's good. And then she gets in the WWE speak and it's really broken English because she's not used to the verbiage.
Right.
So,
yeah.
So I agree.
No, I mean, you know, it's just, Kind of like what we were saying earlier, Mongo. Maximize the positives, minimize the negatives, man.
Drew McIntyre beat Damian Priest in a Sin City street fight. I loved this ending. I loved Chekhov's double tables, and I love that he went for old school and, hey, just shove him off the rope. This was a nice little street fight. I liked it.
Yeah, this over-delivered considering how ho-hum the build to all of this was and how kind of dumb this angle was.
Yeah, yeah, that was the problem, is that Drew deserved much better of an angle where he could really talk his smack, and Damian Priest wasn't the guy necessarily.
Man, I want to hear Drew come out and give a promo now that the fallout between Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins, and CM Punk has occurred. Because Drew McIntyre's I Told You So promo is going to be like $1 million. And I don't, my problem with this storyline is it just doesn't get us to where the real intrigue is, which is Drew McIntyre being the asshole truth teller.
Dominic Mysterio beating Braun Breaker, Finn Balor, and Penta for the Intercontinental title. Also, a match that was everything it needed to be.
Yeah.
And had the correct ending. You know, Dominic is such a shit heel, and I love him.
He's great. And him and Liv are back and better than it's. Dom and Liv have really gone through just a complete level up in terms of personality. I mean, I remember 5 years ago when Liv Morgan she was cute, but didn't quite really have that on the mic it factor thing. And Dominic Mysterio 5 years ago was a non-factor. And now, I mean, my God, they're so over.
I have a note on Liv in a moment when we get to her match. But this was the Randy Orton Open Challenge.
Man, this might be my worst match of the weekend.
No, this was everything it needed to be, and people who were angry at this, I don't understand.
Okay.
In some ways.
Okay.
Let me read Dave Meltzer. The reality is, if the rub of being on Mania and in the ring with Orton was so great for someone, why did WWE not put Aleister Black, Rusev, Sami Zayn, Jeff Cobb, or someone else who would have also gotten a giant pop in the spot? The answer is because they're on your roster. How am I going to put this without seeming insulting to him, and it's not. I don't think Joe Hendry ever gets another WrestleMania moment. I don't. I don't think he is 36 years old. He has a good gimmick. It's people knew who he was. He had a WrestleMania t-shirt, which is a top seller right now. Go get him paid if you're that upset. But I understand the talking point that this didn't do much for TNA. You know what else didn't do much for TNA? Having Kenny Omega as your champ either. TNA is going to be watched by like 100,000 people, and that's your ceiling because there's too much wrestling in the wrestling space. Joe Hendry is a guy, this isn't real, okay? It's not like, oh, you need to keep your aura as a champ strong in case the champ comes to your town or something like that, and then you can have a title. This isn't Apollo Creed and Sylvester Stallone, where the real world champ's going to give this local champ, you know, a chance at the big title to see what happens. This is a moment that Joe Hendry will be able to go live off of for the rest of his life on conventions and whatnot. There's also possibilities that people aren't seeing here, I think. Like, let's say his contract runs out at TNA and he signs with WWE. And look, here's been the pattern. In the Rumble, he was kind of a geek. At WrestleMania, he was kind of a geek. At the next thing he's at, he might get a win for, say, an Intercontinental Championship on his debut or something. But he's not going to be a world champion if he comes to WWE. He might get an NXT belt because they use him on NXT a lot, and people know where he is from that. But listen to that reaction, and people knew his stuff. They knew the song. They sang along. And to me, this was a win for Joe Hendry. I get but everybody else is thinking this is real. Like, oh, who's going to want to watch TNA after this? It's like the Hardys are there. They could have used the Hardys or Dolph Ziggler maybe. But, you know, this is the ceiling for Joe Hendry to me. And I don't understand the anger over this. Chris, talk me out of it.
So I think context matters here. I think the match itself, I got like two things. One, I don't think the match did a whole hell of a lot for Joe Hendry. He was like basically just a job guy.
I agree.
So I thought that, you know, this is not the best WrestleMania spot. Now, pulling back from Randy Orton per se, let's just think about the Joe Hendry situation. We have a guy who is under contract in TNA, not currently under contract in WWE, although obviously WWE and TNA have a working relationship. Theoretically, WWE could be in negotiations to buy out Hendry's contract. But right now, Hendry's contract runs to, as I understand it, like at least the end of the year, potentially a little bit into 2026. So Hendry is right now, as a wrestler under contract in a different company, getting one hell of a push and one hell of a presentation as an outside talent. He did get a prestigious presentation on NXT. Was it everything that I think most people would want it? No. And like the Ethan Page, Joe Hendry song remains pretty high in my cringe of 2024. that Ethan put on some clothes with some really badass shit right there. And I mean, not like bad ass, like bad. It was ass and it was shit. So I...
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Think that when you pull the camera back and you go, this is a TNA wrestler getting a WrestleMania payday and getting the name build on a WrestleMania stage, which is in front of millions versus the 100,000 on TNA, it's hard to look at this as anything other than a win. And frankly, getting fed to Randy Orton seems to have engendered some sympathy towards Joe Hendry. It's and Orton gave him the Stone Cold Steve Austin respect finish, where he did pick him up and shake his hand and everything. Yes, he then stunnered him, Stone Cold style afterwards. But that's not nothing. All that shit matters. It'd be different if Hendry came out there and got Eric Rowan.
Yes.
That's a different thing, right? Like, he did not get Eric Rowan here.
I would have done, give Randy a mic after the first one. Do the respect thing. Let's give it up for Joe Hendry. Go buy his shirt. Do a plug for his shirt so he makes a little bit more extra money on that night. And then RKO him again. But everybody was expecting the other RKO, and nobody holds it against the guy getting RKO'd necessarily. Unless you're a flippy dude like Ricochet, in which you're just dead in the water after that because you can't think of a way to rebuild. Joe Hendry's good enough to rebuild on NXT the next...
He could do a whole promo about how when he got RKO'd, he saw his future flash before his eyes.
Yes.
And it lit the way forward for what he needs to do now.
I need to stop doing this stupid posing stuff or whatever,
Yeah.
It could be fine. It's one of those things where
thanks Randy for motivating him with the RKO.
I mean, this is newsletter. Oh, WWE never helps anybody, and all they do is bury each other because they're the superior product and they can't ever show any weakness. And they don't. This is WrestleMania. This is their.
I think Joe Hendry has been treated so well as an outsider wrestler. Basically kind of, you know, coming in with a suitcase and doing some journeyman work. They clearly like him. They gave him a quality presentation on NXT. They gave him a spot in the Royal Rumble, and they gave him a spot on Mania. I am sorry. Find me a wrestler kind of coming from outside into WWE who's gotten anywhere near this love. I'm racking my brain, but I can't come up with someone who kind of comps like that.
I mean, maybe AJ when he debuted at the Rumble because he got, you know, to eliminate a lot of people before and last a long time.
Was he under contract at that point?
Yes, he had just
signed. So, you know what I'm saying? So he's got to – we need to find – you would need to find someone not current – like or not under contract at the time of getting some of these initial runs.
Right.
That doesn't happen under McMahon.
Logan Paul beat AJ Styles by pinfall. I thought this was going to be a great match. It just turned out to be good to very good. I think the Logan Paul Jeff comes in with the brass knuckles finish has kind of played itself. I kind of wanted iShow Speed up against in the prime bottle again, getting his butt kicked, but he already kind of did that before. I mean, he took a massive spear from Braun a few weeks earlier, so I don't think that was a requirement. Karrion Kross was a nice little touch. He's had a few things to say that have made the rounds in terms of promos, and he's very good at it. And you know, it furthers the Karrion Kross AJ Styles story, but I didn't think it was needed in this match. I kind of wanted to see Logan Paul do a little bit more, to be honest with you, as it was Mania.
I want the Karrion Kross story to go a different direction. I actually want Karrion Kross to be like three quarters earnestly helping AJ Styles because Logan Paul really does bother him. And I would have liked this, like Logan, basically he comes out and tries to clear the lane for AJ Styles and tries to help Styles win the match legitimately. Not like use the brass knuckles, but like a somewhat turn of Cross essentially to build to Cross versus Logan Paul. Cause I actually think there's a lot of money between those two guys promoing off on each other, especially based off of what we saw with Karrion Kross's promos this weekend. I think that's the promos will be more intriguing than AJ Styles and Karrion Kross are going to be, or AJ Styles and Logan Paul were.
I hope there was a moment like on Sunday before WrestleMania started where Logan Paul and AJ Styles just kind of look at each other and go, you know what? Everybody else is saying the dumb stuff in the media this weekend, and it ain't us.
I know. Like AJ Styles and Logan Paul somehow managed to not be part of the dumb comments squad.
All right.
What are your thoughts about the shape of the earth?
Hey, Logan, about that stunt you did? No.
We would like to ask you about some insider trading.
All right. Might be rant time, might not be. Don't know yet. We'll see how it goes. Lyra Valkyria and Becky Lynch defeated Liv Morgan and Raquel Rodriguez for the WWE Women's Tag Team titles. An angle was run on SmackDown on Friday before Mania to knock Bayley out of the match with a separated shoulder, which for some reason meant she couldn't even walk to the ring with Lyra and Becky to get a Mania payday. Becky Lynch has decided that she wanted to come back and turn heel. So this was just for the WrestleMania pop. This has been known for weeks to be happening, so this wasn't like it was thrown on Bayley at the last moment, because originally, as you might recall, this was supposed to be Bayley versus Roxanne Perez. I don't know if it was Becky big time and going, I'd like to be at Mania and do the pop here, or if it was Triple H saying, hey, Becky, would you like to be there? But look, from a business perspective, you have to do this move because Becky Lynch is your big star. Getting the big pop is worth it for that. On the other hand, Bayley has been around all year being the glue of this division. And you've already screwed her over once when she was at her hottest to be the host of WrestleMania in Orlando. I think it was Orlando, or maybe it was New York. I can't remember which one she was. It might have been New York. Can't remember. But it was one where it was like she was at her peak, and they just made her the host of WrestleMania, do comedy sketches and stuff like that. Match itself was fine. I also don't like Becky Lynch as a heel. She's not good at it. I mean, the man character I'm already a little annoyed by, and I like Becky Lynch. You will find no bigger defender of Bayley than me in the commentariat. So when I say that for business, it was probably the right move. Creatively and roster-wise, probably a bad one. I will say this, though, Chris, coming out of this, and on the Raw Monday for the turn, there is a story here that needs to be explored. And that is that Liv Morgan is kind of a reverse Fraxium, in that she is a scumbag, but she is a loyal scumbag to her partners and to the Judgment Day. And all these people that say they're nice and they're friends are turning on one another as soon as it comes to the WWE Women's Tag Team Championship. Because we saw it happen with Bianca, Naomi, and Jade, and now we've seen it with Becky Lynch and Condor Man, Lyra Valkyria.
Yeah, I really did not care for Lyra's reaction to Becky turning on her. I thought that the reaction itself really did a number on her.
The hurt part? The shock?
Yes, it went on too long, right? Like the first time you get hit, you're shocked, you pull yourself in the corner, but she didn't even get her hands up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That made her come off weak as far as I was concerned.
The other problem with this is it's not the most interesting story you can tell. And I don't think you want to do this with Lyra just yet, because she's still relatively new. She's getting the woos finally for her entrance. But the interesting choice would have been Lyra was the one who jumped Bayley so that she could be tag partners with her hero, Becky Lynch, and being manipulative that way. But yeah, I agree. I didn't like the turn. I thought it was kind of stupid and forced. But I think it gets Becky gets to be the poison ivy or Catwoman of your Batman's rogues gallery stable of Bane the Joker and the Penguin. Maybe she's the Riddler. Who knows? With her terrible sense of humor, she's probably the Riddler.
Yes, right? Like, it's like the riddle, but like she tells riddles that aren't really good riddles.
Yeah.
Like, why does an elevator go up and down? And she doesn't actually have a punchline to it. It's just a setup.
Why is a raven like a writing desk? Wait, isn't that from Alice in Wonderland? Yeah. Or the Dixie cup riddles, you know?
Yes. Yeah. Bazooka bubblegum jokes.
Bazooka Joe. She's just chewing a bunch of Bazooka Joe trying to get material.
Just getting material desperately.
And then John Cena defeated Cody Rhodes. My question to Sean Ross Sapp was, was John Cena trying to wrestle a bad wrestling match on purpose for the first 10 minutes of this match? Because it felt like it to me. Or is John Cena just cooked? I don't know. What do you think, Chris?
Man, to do this right, he doesn't actually have to be particularly physically gifted. So this, to me, is a failure to conceptualize what is required of heel John Cena, more so than an indictment on a failure to execute. I think that John's been left to his own devices, both in conceiving what the in-ring style is like and what the whole oeuvre of the character is. And that, as we talked about earlier, has only been exacerbated by Dwayne Johnson going like, well, now that I've set all this shit in motion, I'm out. Y'all tell the story for me. I started a story. I don't need to finish it. Like, you know, okay, cool. That's neat. But now that Darth Vader has absented himself from the rest of Star Wars, it really is on John Cena here to, I guess, make a story happen. And I think the issue starts with conceptualization. And then that, but if you have a bad concept, John Cena is not going to be able to rise above the material. And I actually kind of struggle to come up with a lot of wrestlers who could, because the tone is so off the mark right now from where it needs to be.
Agreed. Anything from the Raw fallout that you'd like to bring up in the Lazy River? We're going kind of in order.
Absolutely. I already mentioned it before, but I just think the Braun Breaker edition is so great. Breaker and Rollins and Heyman, I think, are going to develop a really, really good dynamic. And there's so many different ways that that story can go. Obviously, you know, you could ultimately have Breaker and Rollins have a really great match at a high profile event, if you want to turn them on one another. But for the time being, I think they can just be a two-man power trip, and Heyman's like loving life as he's got like basically the ace of the current generation and the ace of the up and coming generation under his belt.
Now is the time to rename him Steiner.
I agree.
Is it. This is the time.
Yeah.
Otherwise, the time has passed. I liked the Rusev introduction. I didn't love it. I liked it. There's something I don't like about one guy who goes through tag teams. I just don't buy it for the most part. You know,
it is such a move in terms of push that you have to be fully committed to it. Like, it works when you do it with Vader, one, because he's doing it on no profile tag teams, job guy tag teams.
That's
a big part of it. And then the other part of it is that you're putting a rocket ship on that guy to the moon. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we're doing that with Rusev. So
I
having
don't either.
Rusev take out a somewhat profile tag team, it doesn't really do anything, and it rings kind of false in terms of what his power level is ultimately going to scale out to be.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I liked the twist of Roxanne and Julia being a unit. I don't know if they've been called up, and we're just going to have like a massive, just pretty friggin' amazing women's talent into the division. If we're possibly calling up Julia, Roxanne, and Stephanie Vaquer at the same time, good God. I mean, you kind of wonder what's going to happen with Fallon Henley and all this, if she ever gets called up. But
poor Fallon Henley, man. It's like Stephanie Vaquer showed up, and I mean, dude.
Stephanie and Io was nice.
I know.
Enjoying that.
I know. Dude, she's the goods, man. Like, Steph's
the
goods.
Money. She is
the
money.
She's the money.
Julia is figuring out, though, that her kind of gait in terms of how she carries herself works well as a heel. Because I liked the stare down with her and Rhea and her just kind of fading away. I thought that worked for her versus what she's been kind of doing as a baby face on the roster.
It scans as aloof,
yes,
as a heel, and
yes,
as a baby face, it came off as
nervous
and or like spacey.
And Roxanne's just she, if you want, I rewatched this and she does the best. I don't want to call it an IF, but it's, or I fuck it. I should just say it. but it's a, she gives Julia a look and kind of raises her eyebrows like, let's go have some fun. And then they just both go at it. And it just, the timing of it was so good because it's just like, oh, are both of them here to have a four? Nope. They're aligned with each other. I like this more than Cora Jade. No offense to Cora Jade. I think Cora Jade's good as a second banana to Roxanne. I think she'd make a good third wheel.
Yeah. I think
to this
help.
Crew.
Yes. I think it will again allow Julia's speaking deficiencies to, I think, be kind of masked better. Yeah.
That's the thing they need to figure out is the speaking deficiencies here, because I mean, and even Roxanne has a bit of one with the lisp at times, but overall, I mean, she can handle the things. It's so weird to me because it's like, I don't want Roxanne to be a heel on the main roster. She is an underdog prodigy babyface, straight ahead in the same vein as Side Ponytail Bailey was. All you gotta do is let her win and be cute and she'll be great. I mean, you don't need much else. It's money. And instead they're kind of going against type here with Roxanne having, for lack of a better term, Alexa Bliss syndrome, where she's just mad and small. And it's like, okay, we're going to go with this until we figure out a way to turn her babyface, but she won't be as hot as a babyface now. That's the only part that gives me some pause, Chris.
I'm with you on that. Other notes on the show here. I liked the McAfee Gunther angle a lot.
Yeah.
And I thought Michael Cole, for his part, did such a damn good job carrying the weight of that scene. I thought actually Cole and McAfee were quite good. McAfee's sort of like reluctance. God damn it, I got to do this. And he like, you know, like almost like this, the second I punch this guy, my life's over, but I got to do it. Like, I can't just watch Michael Cole get choked out.
Although I do think Michael Cole might have broken his nose. It sounded like there was something wrong with it afterwards. I didn't quite buy the I can't let a bully keep me from doing commentary. Although I did like the Joe Tess, Michael Cole team up. Joe
but then
Tess
I liked that that got picked up narratively by Vic the next night on NXT, and then him and Booker were arguing about it. But that's world building, right? Like an event happened on Monday, and on Tuesday people were still talking about it. This is all I'm asking for.
Yeah, it's just basic narrative structure. It's good.
Narrative structure, right? Like, Vic is like, yeah, you know what? I agree with what Michael Cole did. And then Booker, you know, there's no reason to be doing what Michael Cole did. You know, like, you know, and that's honestly perfect deployment of Booker there. You have, like, the heel opinion on this, and then you have sort of the babyface announcers going like, yeah, we're staying in solid air with Cole.
Let's get through Stand and Deliver. Solid show, I thought. The only weak spot, the one that we thought it would be, the six-man tag, and it wasn't that weak. It was a storytelling match to get Channing, Stax, Lorenzo to turn on Tony D'Angelo. But Ricky Saints defeated Ethan Page. I thought that was a solid match. A good opener. Both guys doing what they need to do in NXT, I thought.
Both guys doing what they need to do. Both guys having... I mean, I just think the NXT scale ring looks better on them. I just think they look better. They look better in the dimensions of the NXT ring. You know, it's
and
not like a, I like my men in
them.
WWE sort of thing. It's like, I just think it works better for them.
Yeah. And what was my match of the weekend until that three-way? Hank and Tank defeating Fraxium for the NXT tag team titles. I actually thought Fraxium was going to be the ones to answer the New Day instead of Otis and Tozawa, but it looks like they're probably going to be on their way to the SmackDown work rate tag team thing. But Hank and Tank here, living up to the name Tank in terms of big guys just moving at a high rate of speed and running people over. That dive onto the table was something, especially getting the table to stay there and him landing flush without sliding off or necessarily hurting himself. I did really like this match quite a bit.
This is not my favorite team in the world, but my God, you gotta look at two dudes who know that they have exactly one moment, and that moment is right now.
Yes.
And that they need to do this right now, and they need to go out there and give it all in this specific match. And they go out there and they kill themselves for this match. The amount of effort. I'm not giving it a star rating. This is a 5-star effort match from these two dudes.
Yeah,
the effort they could not have. I mean, short of working to the point of giving them both heart attacks and dying in ring, going so hard, they couldn't have done much more. Anything else, it would have been a trip to the hospital.
This is one where you look at it and like it's a team like, I don't know. There's a team that like. Consistently gets like 1.5 stars from Dave, and all of a sudden they just decided one night to be like they just had something. They felt the music. I don't know what it was, but then they elevate themselves to legendary. So this is gonna be the pinnacle of their career, I think, in terms of a match. And I was shocked by it. And you know what? Good on. I mean,
they rose to the occasion, right? Like that's. They were clutch. The fact that they were clutch might actually be their saving grace and give them a little bit of juice here.
Yeah, they went for one big, okay, let's hope it works kind of spot. And that was the dive straight onto the table.
Yeah.
And it worked.
No,
and that's
right.
They didn't do anything else in terms of trying to overextend themselves too much. They just really worked at a fast clip of the stuff they knew how to do.
Yeah, but man, if that spot had bombed,
yes,
that's it.
Or he breaks something and breaks a rib or something to that effect.
Right, and then they're dropping the title in 2 weeks, but you know, within a month, and they're never getting those belts back again.
Also, rising to the occasion, I thought the women's ladder match for the NXT North American Championship wasn't anything terribly spectacular or death-defying. Worked within the bounds of the match. Had a few spots
with
ladders.
I'm fine with that because this match was not getting a lot of profile, so it makes no sense for these women to go out there and kill themselves for a match that didn't have that heavy a stakes on it.
I thought Sol and Kehlani were good in their athletic stuff. I thought Izzy was a good base. Thea's crazy. So is Zarya to some respects. And Lola Vice was good. There wasn't anything where I'd go, oh, man, that was horrible in this. It was a wrestling match with ladders as opposed to a ladder match with stunts. And I appreciated that.
I'm very much hoping that Lola's done in NXT. Like, let's get her up on Raw. Let's reset her. Let's get her a character, like a strong character-driven personality, and move her on from the mid-card hell that she has been stuck in NXT.
The Dark State D'Angelo family match again. It was a story match. I don't see Tony D'Angelo working on the main roster. I think you need a gimmick refresh, though. I just what are you gonna do? The same mob stuff over again?
No, it's okay. I mean I think him doing the mob stuff, it would be a mistake a second time around. I mean, look, have him have some Italian heritage and all of that sort of thing. Maybe even have him occasionally be on board for taking a payday to take somebody out or something like that. But I wouldn't go the mafioso crap. I thought it was in poor taste. And if Gulf of America was nuclear, might I just suggest that the Gabagool Mafia probably should get the same treatment. And if it didn't, I think that's an interesting commentary for all of us to mull on when we are taking a dump or something sometime.
Four-way for the NXT women's title, Stephanie Vaquer beating Julia, Jada Parker, and Jordan Grace. I thought this was fine. Four women had their shine and they worked well together. I really enjoyed this one as well. Not as much as Stephanie and Io. But still, and Jada Parker, man, that's the one that you go, is she going to rise to the occasion? I thought she did. I thought she was good.
Yeah, Miss Parker is someone who I'm interested to see what the plans are for her this coming year here, because, you know, she's got a lot of personality. She is tough.
She's a heavy hitter. And she needs to be in there with heavy hitters as opposed to these graceful gymnastic women. types. Like, Stephanie can take her stuff. Julia can take her stuff, and Jordan can take her stuff. But, like, give me an Asuka or a Bianca versus Jada Parker. And let's see some power moves out of the two of them.
Yeah, that's right. I think they need to come up with a good roadmap for her, because with the right presentation and everything, they can get her established as a very strong mid-card champion in the women's division on the main roster here, and really establish who Miss Parker is as like the women's intercontinental champion or whatever the equivalent is these days.
And then Oba Femi retained in the three-way, and that was really good too.
Yeah, look, I think Oba's never going to be my favorite, but he clearly is getting
I thought he might be the Randy Orton person, and that he might beat Randy. That's what I was thinking coming into this. I thought they were going to put him on there.
That would be interesting. I don't know that I wouldn't have him beat Randy. What I'd have him do is toss off the RKO the first time.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Randy goes for the RKO, Opa just catches him and just tosses 300-pound Randy Orton off.
He is 300 now, isn't he?
Yeah,
a big man.
Yes, I know, right? Yeah, and like have commentary just be like, oh my God, Randy Orton's never been tossed off that, and he's the biggest he's ever been.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, like that would be a WrestleMania moment for Oba, even if the second time around Randy had to, like, I don't know, basically do the DDP one where, you know, you Irish whip him into the corner and then come off and, you know, diamond cutter.
Let's do some quick notes. Quickly on the NXT follow-up. Noam Dar.
Yeah.
Good to have around again. Like him. Lexus King kind of figuring things out.
Oh yeah. This guy's got a personality. He's
like the Penn and Teller stuff on Stand and Deliver was pretty good, I thought.
I thought the follow-up was good too. I think remember a few years ago when this guy was Brian Pillman Jr. in AEW, and the AEW fans' big observation about the guy is that he couldn't talk at all. And now Lexus King feels like he's a good promo. He is a good presence on screen.
He's finding himself.
Yes. He's confident. He knows how to be this guy.
No, I'm trying to wipe the beard off. I still he's still goofy, but I still like Metaphor as a unit. I do. I think they work as a unit, even though they are very disparate in their personalities at times.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that it really works as a unit so much as the tag team of the women work.
Yeah,
and something
Ashanti, is it Ashanti?
It's Ora Mensa.
Oh, that's right, it's Ora Mensa.
Ora Mensa, Kofi.
And,
right, Ora Mensa and Gnome's friendship is funny because it doesn't seem like they'd be friends, but honestly, right. You could probably get this going more if Noam Dar had like more chemistry with Miss Jackson. Right, like if there was like kind of like a little like romantic angle going between them two or something.
And Joe Hendry got some shine on this show.
Yeah, right. So and like yeah, Joe Hendry's back, and who's he in the mix with? Oba Femi and Trick Williams. So tell me that they hate this guy. Please keep telling me it.
Trick just seems like a third wheel though at this point.
that to me is, you know, almost like the headline here is that like Trick Williams has become an afterthought of a man.
Quick Dynamite stuff. We don't have to dwell too much on it. Look, MJF in the Hurt Syndicate works with for me. I liked that the Callis family acted as a unit last night and did like a stomp beatdown of guys instead of just wrestling moves and stuff. They feel like a real faction. I liked that a lot. I'm happy that Jamie Hayter. It's going to be Jamie Hayter and Mercedes, because I think Jamie Hayter needed a heat up. Oh, and also Stokely's back. Good. Him and FTR, good pairing.
Good. I like that pairing. I thought Stokely's promo was good classic Stokely. knowing the knowing the facts well enough to actually basically tell a story, which is, I think, extremely useful.
No comedy out of him, though. I want serious Stokely this time around.
Yeah, agreed. You know, for me, the Buck stuff continues to be weak.
Yes.
As is the Death Rider stuff. I mean, never has there been a main event angle with like less meat on the bones that has run longer than the Death Riders. Like,
they brought in Swerve, Kenny Omega, and Okada to just kind of be there on screen for 5 seconds.
Yeah. It's just the main event picture in this company is just like, it is a soupy, swampy mess of like Adam Page having feelings about different stuff. And MJF comes in and he's like, I'm going to beat you in the Owen. And Adam Page is like, I don't want that. And then you have Swerve Strickland and Kenny Omega. And Kenny's out there and he's trying to remember the past in a way that feels favorable to him while yelling at the Bucks. And all these men, the three that I just mentioned, have actual executive roles in the company in the kayfabe world, but none of them seem to remember that at a particular occasion and never seem to use that power. And there is no real overarching structure. Like, you can just make matches with whoever you want, whenever you want, because no one's in control.
I was shocked that Mark Briscoe got the win. I know it set up the match later with Kevin Knight and Ricochet, but it's still, his last singles win on Dynamite was June 2024.
Yeah.
And that was such a pleasure to see because I love me some Mark Briscoe. The matches were good last night, but it's just like one of those things where it's like, yeah, you're going to have good matches, but the angles are what's important to me.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just AEW continues to be a show where good wrestling happens, but Dynamite needs to be world building. You can have Collision. You can have the other ancillary shows be where, you know, 1 hour of prestige wrestling. And I might submit that maybe the viewership market for like just hardcore prestige wrestling is probably about an hour every week, not 2 hours. AEW Dynamite needs to be 30 minutes of prestige wrestling, about 45 minutes of world building, and about 45 minutes of preliminary matches every week.
Yeah, and you'll never convince the wrestling fans of that because they want wrestling and everybody else wants
No. I'll never be able to convince the AEW fans of that because the AEW fans just want spots.
Yeah.
Wrestling fans, of which there are millions, I know this because I see WWE's ratings, do want a story. They want a world that they can live in.
Yeah, and it came clear to me where it's like somebody quoted the old Bobby Heenan thing is that the problem is people know too much and now everybody else thinks it's fake, but the boys thinks it's real. I'd include wrestling newsletter and whatnot subscribers in that somewhat because it's like, oh, it's a sport and wins and losses matter. No, they don't. It's the world building that matters. Everything else are trinkets. That's why I don't take the Joe Hendry stuff all that seriously either. It's just, it's the world building is what is important. And that's the thing we bring here every week on Shake Them Ropes. Let's do Vader Club and get out of here, Chris. I was legitimately mad at you at first when you picked this because I looked at the video and it said an hour. And I went, Chris, I've watched enough wrestling this week. But look, Kenta, great. Steve Dr. Death Williams, great. I will once again put my caveat here that I still think that Jim Ross asked Dave Meltzer for a favor to get Steve Dr. Death Williams in the Hall of Fame of the Wrestling Observer posthumously, and that's how he did it, was just, oh, you can only vote on Steve Dr. Death Williams' time in Japan, not his middling runs in the United States. Those shouldn't affect him any. But I do like Steve Williams. It's just one of those things where I never put him as necessarily a Hall of Famer, but I can make the case. But this was a manly match. Please.
Man, Chris, yeah, I would
never. The floor was yours.
I will not. I'll go right out and say, Steve Williams, not a Hall of Famer for me. He's a good talent. When he's good, he's great. But like saying Steve Williams is a Hall of Famer is like saying Mike Awesome is a Hall of Famer to me. I like Mike Awesome. Mike Awesome's has his good matches. When Mike Awesome's good, he's great, but not a Hall of Famer. This, however, is, you know, I mean, dude, it's such good work. Kenta is outstanding here. He's just this beautiful synthesis of so many different things. You have the American style high cross bodies and that sort of thing. You have the Japanese strong style hard chop spots, and nobody does it better than Kenta. Kenta's hard chop spots just absolutely rule. You feel them. It's like the only person who's kind of close is Shibata when he was like 10 years younger, and those matches had that feeling to them. But man, Kenta's stuff's so good, and then all of his power moves rule. Kenta's just so great. But then Steve Williams, for his part, man, he delivers on some big spots here. That top rope belly-to-belly suplex is just out of this world. It's such a great spot. And then even the sequence with the Oklahoma Slams is really great, because first he does an Oklahoma Slam and he gets a two count. Then Williams goes to the well once too often. This is it's such good storytelling here. He goes for the Oklahoma Slam, and it almost costs him the match here, because Kenta basically gets leverage on him and gets him into like a 2.5. There's so many good sequences in this match. How I ended up getting here, actually, is I watched the Dark Side of the Ring on Vader this last week, who has nothing to do with this match in particular. But if you watch the Dark Side of the Ring on Vader, I think it's very good, and it's a very good look at his star-crossed and self-sabotaging time in WCW and WWF. That being said, the way they chose to tell this story, you'd act like Vader didn't do shit all else ever again after he died in WWF in 1997, shortly after being tombstoned by Kane. But he actually went back to Japan and had another a really good run. And initially I was looking, yes, I had such a huge problem with the end of Dark Side of the Ring going like, and that's it. Vader basically killed his career right there. He's old and fat and stupid and dumb, and he died. And it's like, no, he didn't. Like that's not what happened. So I ended up was looking for a Vader match that I couldn't remember which ones we've watched and which ones we have from that vintage, because we've actually watched some of those. They're quite good. And then I was like, you know what? Let's bring it to the ace of this, you know, generation right here, Kenta Kobashi. And Steve Williams is a guy who I feel like we haven't talked a lot as much about, because as you brought up at the beginning, dude, his shit's just hit or miss, right? When he's good, he's good. But when it's not good, it's like not even worth watching. He's just like dumpy and lumpy and boring.
I'll find some Miracle Violence connection to watch. It might actually be those Steiner matches that were actually in WCW, but maybe that'll be my Vader Club for next week. As I like to say with this All Japan in the 90s thing, I come for the clotheslines and I stay for the suplexes, because both of those, like, these clotheslines have some sauce to them when they're doing them. But I'll tell you my favorite thing in this match, and you're going to think it's ridiculous, but there was something about just simplicity and crowd-pleasing that I liked in this match. And that's the test of strength spot that they did. And they took it seriously, and it's a goofy-ass spot. Don't get me wrong. I don't generally like tests of strength, per se. But I liked this one, because it felt like they tried to make it look realistic, at least,
dude,
in terms
dude, that's
of...
That's sort of the whole point of this match to me, is it's not like any of these spots are groundbreaking. The belly-to-belly off the top's pretty sick.
Oh, for the guys that size? It's
yeah. But for me, more than anything, It's that every single spot is done with a certain level of urgency and stiffness and seriousness. The tense strength. I'm watching as we're talking right now, a chin lock being done. Yeah, rest hold chin lock, and even that's being worked like about as hard as you can work it.
Yeah, it's, like, not, it's not the Randy Orton chin lock where he's just kind of laying there on the ground and talking to the guy, telling him what to do next and stuff.
Oh, you know another spot I absolutely love? It just came up. When Kenta dives off the top ropes and Steve Williams just knees him in the head.
Yes.
Oh, so good. So simple. So good. This match was just like, I was like, oh, I bet this would be good. It scratched all my itches. Like good psychology, good intensity, good work, inside, outside, nice variety of styles elapsing throughout the match, so we're not just doing one thing over and over and over again. This is a good one, guys. Go and look it up. September 3rd, 1994, Steve Williams versus Kenta Kobashi for the Triple Crown title.
Also, I really liked Steve Dr. Death Williams' entrance music. I believe it was "I Love It Loud" by Kiss.
Okay, yeah. I think so. That's that one, right?
I think so. I can't remember it.
Isn't that Pyromania?
No, Pyromania is.
Love Rock and Roll. That's a Rock of.
No, that's right. You're thinking Rock of Ages. By Def Leppard.
Yeah.
I'll rewatch that part of the video and see what the music is.
Guys, this was a hoot. I have a hard time, not having commentary is a little rough for me, but I honestly just kicked on some music and I was totally into this. The action's just there.
If you want to watch it, I put it on the Shake Them Ropes feed. I retweeted it as well, and I also put it in the Discord. But that'll do it for Shake Them Ropes this week. Look, I did a lot of audio. You can listen to the two Fightful Mania Night post shows, myself and Sean Rossap. Again, 2 hours each night, thoroughly breaking down that card if this wasn't enough for you. I also, past two Dynamites, thoroughly deconstructed that with Paul Ace Fontaine of Figure Four Daily / Wrestling Observer. That's on Fight Game Media in your audio pod catchers. It's called The Dynamite Show. We also go live about 20 minutes on YouTube and do it live there. So, if you have time after watching the wrestling, you can watch me be an idiot on video. Follow me at CrapGame13 on X. Chris, what are your plugs?
Oh, I am in the process of getting a number of my tracks mastered. You can actually hear one of the new ones up on my Instagram. Please go and listen to it. Instagram.com/DrNove. It's called Vessel. That one's got sent over to get mastered. Several others. I actually have a whole little work list here. My hope is to get 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 songs. Kind of put out as an album here in the next month or so, and maybe 6 weeks or so. We're about halfway done on my end. I need to get masters back, and I have five songs left to finish out. So should be fun, or it won't be fun. We'll see what happens.
Weekend, no wrestling. Bye. Hey, kids, do you like wrestling? Well, we like wrestling, too. We are Shake Them Ropes here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Myself and Chris Novembrino kind of doing a lazy river of wrestling criticism, going through the news and whatever happened in stateside television wrestling. And also, you know what? Sometimes we just like to watch old stuff and talk about that, too. Love for you to give us a listen if you haven't already. We are Shake Them Ropes here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. It prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.